Chapter 13, which is a mirror of itself. It was raining the next morning when Harvey and Mahogany sneaked out of the hotel and hurried to the station. An old commuter train was waiting to convey them through the fields of Lombardy on their way to Mantua. The car they boarded consisted of a series of bank seats that faced one another, separated by an aisle that ran down the center. Harvey and Mahogany took a bank in the corner of the car and sat down side by side. The seat across from them was empty until an Italian girl boarded at a small town. She was with a group of high school students on their way to Mantua, but was not inclined to sit with them. Instead, she paused in the door of the wagon, then moved toward the seat opposite Harvey. "È libero questo?" she asked. "Penso di sì," said Harvey. The captain's appearance, had she seen him a few days earlier, might have struck mortal terror into her youthful heart. But his night in the Veronese bath had done wonders to restore his ruddy complexion, and the espresso Mahogany had poured down his throat had given his eyes and skin the luster and blush of youth. This, coupled with a touch of Athena's all-gracious hand, had made Captain Harvey, for the moment at least, a handsome man. The girl, like a million others from small Italian towns, was graceful, compassionate, and polite. Though not beautiful in the cinema sense of physical exaggeration, she was more than charming in the way she moved and spoke, and the way she used her eyes. Harvey wanted to address her, but as soon as he began to share her disposition, a natural reserve prevented him from doing so. She, too, wanted to speak, but refrained, and so they sat in silence, looking out the window at the rain that fell on the fields. After a while, she took a book from her pack and opened it across her knees. When she glanced down to read, Harvey turned to look at her. The book was an anthology of Italian literature, and Harvey watched as she slowly separated the pages, catching them with the perspiration of her fingertips, turning them one by one. She knew the captain was watching her, and when she paused at a Petrarchan sonnet, she wished he could hear the silent words, and he could. Benedetto sia il giorno, il mese, e l'anno, e la stagione, e il tempo, e l'ora, e il punto, e il bel paese, e il loco ov'io fui giunto, da due begli occhi che legato me hanno. Translation. Blessed be the day, and the month, and the year, and the season, and the time, and the hour, and the second, and the beautiful town, and the spot where I encountered two beautiful eyes that have bound me to them. Petrarch, Sonnet 61. When she stopped reading, she looked up, and Harvey turned away. Though his gaze was apparently fixed on the fields, the gray light of the cloudy morning had converted the window into a vague mirror, and he could see her reflection in the glass. She could see his as well, and they were able to continue to stare without looking eye to eye. Harvey relaxed and let her drink in his features, and he admired her, delighting especially in the softness of her eyes. Slowly, surely, she fell in love, and as she fell in love, he fell in love. They fantasized about their future life together, working side by side in the early years of poverty, rejoicing in the birth of their firstborn, and their second, and their third, becoming perfect Italian parents who lived solely for their children, content to wait for festival days to rekindle their love. They were dancing a waltz in the moonlight of Capri when Lago Superiore announced their arrival in Mantua. It had come so suddenly. What had seemed eternal a moment before was now gone. Harvey sat in silence as the girl gathered her things and rose to leave. When she moved into the aisle, she stopped to look back at him, and he looked at her. But the movement startled them both, and she turned and left the train. "I pray you know me," thought Harvey, "when we meet again." Outside the station, the sky had cleared, and cars were splashing through the bright streets. Mahogany, unable to control his excitement, charged into the city with Adelphine's address in hand. Harvey was equally excited, but lost sight of his friend on the Solferino Bridge, and when he reached the Palazzo Ducale in the center, Mahogany was nowhere to be found. Left alone, the captain sat down on the steps of a church. He noticed the statue of an enormous winged lion and went over to lay his hand on the animal's paw. As soon as he did, Harvey was overcome with a gentle ferocity, and he leapt at a group of passing tourists. The hideous expression of their startled faces frightened him, and he ran from their gaze. The tourists ran as well, some praying, some gathering stones, some screaming horribly to the heavens. Eventually, Harvey regained his courage and began to prowl about on all fours. People fled at every corner, until only the armies of pigeons, pillaging the unattended market, remained when Harvey slouched into view. As he moved through the streets, he began to feel that each alley looked the same, that one corner was any other, and each place was repeated without end. Only he and the sun appeared unique, and even the sun seemed strange, fixed in the sky, making a day seem like an hour, and an hour seem like a day. Unable to bear his solitude, the captain invented and chased imaginary men, running dizzily through the streets until he fell. Then he would crouch in the shadow of a pool or around a corner and pretend he was being followed. Then he would leap from the palace steps until he bled. Sometimes Harvey would pretend the echoes of his steps were the echoes of other beasts, not unlike himself. They had come to visit, and gathered where the Italian Lotharios had gathered only hours before, roaring a sublimated roar. Eventually, one would tell a dirty joke, and they would all laugh heartily, until Harvey's footsteps came to a stop, and his friends would disappear. The news of the hideous creature spread through Mantua until it reached the drawing-room where Adelphine and her mother sat with Mahogany. A neighbor called out from a second-story window across the alley and described the unimaginable horror that her brother's uncle's cousin had described third-hand to her. Adelphine translated the story for Mahogany, who, despite the incredible journey of the tale, guessed that the beast was Harvey, in one of his animalistic states. When he heard there was talk of killing the creature, Mahogany leapt to his feet and rushed out the door. The center of town was abandoned when Mahogany arrived, and there was no sign of Harvey. Moving through the labyrinthine streets, he made his way to the main plaza and began to call his friend. Unfortunately, when Harvey heard his name, he thought one of his imaginary playmates had returned for a game, and he ran to hide. Mahogany continued to search, calling as he went, until he checked all of the main streets. When he was back at the central plaza, he considered, incorrectly, that Harvey might have somehow taken on his personality, and by doing so was engaged in the same search for Harvey as he was. Mahogany hit upon a possible solution, and, instead of calling the captain's name, he called out his own. When Harvey heard the name of his friend, he believed it was the echo of his voice, for who would call out their own name, and that Harvey must be the seeker in the game. Wasting no time, Harvey closed his eyes and counted to 10, then rushed to where Mahogany stood, shouting in the open square. The ferocity in Harvey's eyes faded as his friend's personality took control. and after bathing him in a public fountain, Mahogany led the captain to an abandoned clothing store where he found him an Armani suit. Mahogany hoped its thread would extricate them from their dilemma, and it did, for though they passed crowds of people on the way to Adelphine's house, not one of them recognized the elegantly dressed captain as the Leone della Piazza Sordello. When Adelphine met them at the door and asked about the disappearance of the monster, Mahogany replied he had simply returned to himself.